Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Welcome, everybody, to the RTC Weekly Download. Today, we'll be visiting daytime radio. For those of you who are not familiar with network radio in the daytime, it was programs for women doing housework, cooking shows, soap operas, and in the afternoon, after school, before Dad comes home for dinner, the kids took control of the radio for afternoon adventure shows. Let's go back to some afternoon in the 1940s. We'll start off with a soap opera, The Doctor's Wife, from June 30th, 1952.
The makers of X-Lax, America's best-tasting laxative, present every day, Monday through Friday, The Doctor's Wife, starring Patricia Wheel and Donald Curtis. The gay, heartwarming story of a woman who is married to a doctor and likes it. Everybody, believe me, everybody should know the facts about laxatives. Many people really have little or no knowledge of the drawbacks of certain preparations they use. For example, powerful hurry-up products may upset your digestion. Bulk preparations are inconvenient to take and may fail to give you timely help. There is, however, one laxative which is free from these drawbacks. This is the active ingredient of X-Lax. Its effectiveness has been established by scientific tests and medical experience. Many doctors use it in their practice. You see, X-Lax does not upset you or rob you of vitamins and minerals. It's mild and gentle, yet there is nothing more helpful, more satisfying. And it's good to know, too, that X-Lax is America's best-tasting laxative. Tastes like delicious chocolate. So next time nature forgets, remember this. Change to X-Lax, and notice the change in yourself. Impatient and fretful, from waiting for Dan to return home from his interview with Mrs. Irwin, Julie Palmer throws aside the magazine she's been reading, rises from the glider on the porch, and enters the living room through the French doors. The room is shadowy and cool, for the Venetian blinds are lowered against the late afternoon sun. And for the moment, Julie considers settling down at her desk to write her brother-in-law a letter. But she knows that her mind would be unable to concentrate. So instead, she picks up the letter she received from Ned that morning and goes into the kitchen in search of Betty.
Betty! Just coming up from the cellar, Miss Palmer.
What on earth are you doing down there on such a hot day?
Oh, heck, it's cooler down there than up here. I went down with a bunch of old papers to save, and before I knew it, I was perusing them and sitting on the steps as cool as a cucumber. You ought to try it.
Well, maybe I will. Betty, I thought maybe you'd like to hear the letter we received from Mr. Palmer today.
Oh, I sure would. I can settle down and shell the peas meanwhile. Okay, read ahead. I'm all ears, Miss Palmer.
Oh, well, let's see now. Where'll I begin?
Read me the part about his flying, if he talks about it any.
All right, I will.
First time I ever knew a flyer, face to face, you know. Though to look at him, you'd never think the doctor's brother had it in him to be such a daredevil.
Wait till you hear what he writes. So far, our flying schedule has been hot and heavy.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be here at Willow Grove only 2 weeks, and then after a few days' delay, we'll proceed with orders to Cherry Point, North Carolina, where we'll be assigned to our future squadrons.
Hmm.
They're trying to get us through here in 2 weeks. This means flying all the time. They decided that we only needed an hour or so dual instruction before we soloed again.
That means going up all alone, don't it?
That's right, Betty.
Mm. In an aeroplane is the one time I should think a person wouldn't mind a backseat driver. Go on, Miss Palmer.
So, on the second day, I was up by myself, nervously trying to remember what to do next.
Mm-hmm.
I took my little book along on how to fly this aeroplane and consulted it regularly.
That wouldn't help me any. I never was one to be able to follow a recipe. Go on, Miss Palmer.
Well, since I had never flown this type of aircraft before, I was thumbing through the pages quite often. But one afternoon, I finally decided to try a few acrobatics. After a loop or two and a barrel roll,
goodness,
I rubbed my hands together and tried an Immelmann. That did it.
Oh, did what? Or do you think you'd best tell me?
It all ended up very happily, Betty. After all, Mr. Palmer did write this letter.
Of course. Go on, Miss Palmer.
Well, I stalled out on top, fell into a back-wrenching spin, lost 4,000 feet of altitude, and came roaring out of it about 50 knots above the restricted speed of the plane and was scared purple. So after that, I stuck to flying up and down the Delaware River.
Mm-mm. Men sure are queer, ain't they?
Well, what do you mean, Betty?
Well, when they do something, they got to do it whole hog.
Well, I guess it's the only way to do it right.
Like the doctor. He's that way, too. Go on, Miss Palmer.
The pace is terrific, and I find myself falling into bed before sunset around 9 o'clock, really beat up.
Mm-hmm.
And we get up at 6.
Boy, sure like to see him doing that. Mr. Palmer's head was always so far up in the clouds.
What's so funny, Betty?
Well, I made a joke. Didn't you get it? His head in the clouds, and now he's an aviator.
Oh, yes, I get it.
Anybody home?
Oh, finally, Dan. Keep your fingers crossed, Betty.
What for now? He's home, ain't he?
I told you. He was seeing Mrs. Irwin today, and heaven knows what happened.
Okay. But it'll be the first time anybody's ever shelled peas, fingered crossed.
It's nice and cool in here, darling.
Much cooler than outside. Hello, Dan.
Hello, dear.
Oh, I'm so glad you're home.
Well, I can't stay. I just dropped by on my way to see some more patients.
But it's 6 o'clock already.
Can't be helped. I lost an hour with Sanders earlier. Some more time with Mrs. Irwin. I'd love something cold to drink, Julie.
Iced tea?
Perfect.
Betty!
Now, can I uncross them already?
Oh, not yet, but you could bring in a pitcher of iced tea for the doctor.
Oh, sure thing, Miss Palmer. It's in the icebox, so it'll only take a minute.
What's all this about uncrossing what, darling?
Oh, Betty's fingers.
Huh?
Waiting for me to hear about what happened with Mrs. Irwin.
Oh.
Well, what did happen?
Well, she ate me up. Like Little Red Riding Hood.
Oh, Dad.
Then she chopped me into little pieces.
I'm going to, if you don't quit this.
And boiled me in oil.
All right. I'm not interested. Don't tell me if you don't want to.
Well, in that case, I'll tell you immediately.
I might listen.
As a matter of fact, nothing much did happen. I told her how I felt about the limitations she'd outlined for the ward she wants to give to the hospital. That's all.
Well, I knew you were going to tell her that. What I want to know is what she said.
Oh, good evening, Doctor.
And the same to you, Betty.
Well, how'd it come out, Miss Palmer?
Well, I don't know yet. I was just finding out when you...
You want me to tell you?
I'm getting so I don't care who does.
It come out fine.
It did?
Mm-hmm, sure. Can't you tell by the cut of the doctor?
Well, I hadn't noticed.
But if I was you, Doctor, I wouldn't go assuming it's all going to be easy as pie. She's a tough one, I hear, that Miss Irwin.
Thanks for the warning, Betty.
Anytime, Doctor. Suppose you'll tell me what time you want dinner.
As soon as I know, Betty.
Okay. No hurry tonight. Too hot to hurry. But come to think, I might take myself to a double feature in one of them air-conditioned houses. Though I usually catch my death of cold.
Is Betty right, Dan?
Pretty near. This iced tea is certainly good.
I'm not going to touch mine till I hear...
All right, darling. Well, as I said, I told her what I thought.
You didn't lose your temper, did you?
Not quite. Mrs. Irwin was quite indignant that I might be suggesting that she was being a little intolerant.
I expected that.
And, of course, she denied it. She believes she's merely showing preference to some people, not prejudice against others. When I tried to show her that one thing leads to another in this sort of thing, she answered that that isn't her problem. It's a dead end. There's no convincing her.
Well, you did tell her, though, that you were not going to accept your appointment as head of the new ward under the circumstances, didn't you?
Oh, yes. I managed to make that perfectly clear. And she finally accepted it as final. She waved before my face, though, the fact that Dr. Sanders had accepted her gift without qualification. Naturally, she didn't believe me when I told her that Dr. Sanders really would have preferred that she hadn't included her stipulation that the ward be limited to admitting the descendants of old families. I suppose I shouldn't have said it, but she didn't believe it anyway. Funny how people refuse to believe what they don't want to believe, isn't it?
Well, at least you got it all off your chest, darling, and you're rid of the whole business.
I hope I am. Well, I better get back to work, or I won't get finished at all today.
Have another glass of iced tea first?
No, thanks, dear. I'll have it when I get home.
Oh, it'll be nice having you all to myself tonight. And your slippers and your pipe. And the devil take the rest of the world.
I think he has a first mortgage on it already, darling. See you later.
right, I'll take it, Miss Fisher. Hello, Dr. Sandler speaking.
Oh, good afternoon, Doctor.
Oh, Mrs. Irwin.
Oh, you recognize my voice. Yes. How nice. You shouldn't still be at the hospital at this hour, Doctor.
Well, I'm just finishing up.
Then I'm lucky I caught you.
Oh?
Dr. Sanders.
Yes.
I've just had the most extraordinary conversation with your Dr. Palmer.
Oh, yes, yes. I knew he was going to see you, and I'm sorry that
he... Yes, indeed. Yes, it is too bad for him, isn't it? Oh, well, none of us are perfect, though it is disappointing to always find that out, especially in persons one has learned to respect.
Yes, yes, I...
But aside from that, Dr. Palmer said many things that should interest you.
Oh, indeed?
Yes, including a few things about you.
For instance, Mrs. Irwin?
Perhaps you should drive out to my home and explain them to me.
Well, if you like...
Now, when can you come?
Well, I'm afraid that this evening is a little difficult.
Too difficult?
Well, it is late and...
Oh, I think later might be too late, Dr. Sanders.
I'll stop by in about half an hour on my way home.
That'll be fine.
Thank you.
In a half an hour, then. I'll be waiting.
Yes.
Goodbye, Dr. Sanders.
Goodbye. Now, what do you suppose he said? Well, I'll soon find out. Yes, that's the trouble with these rich benefactresses, isn't it, Miss Fisher? A man always ends up becoming their slave and minion. Still, $250,000 isn't an insulting price. And there isn't a great deal I wouldn't do to get it for the hospital. Yes. Well, good night, Miss Fisher. See you in the morning.
Have you noticed that nowadays you don't seem to hear much about certain laxatives that were popular a few years ago? At that time, they were described as sensational, amazing, and whatnot. But what happened was simply this. They failed to live up to their glowing promises. Users were disappointed. And in some cases, medical research revealed certain disadvantages. Now, there is one laxative that has stood the test of time. Over the years, chocolated X-Lax has been preferred by more millions of people, young and old, than any other laxative in modern medical history. Its active ingredient has a long and reassuring medical record and is backed by years of scientific research and clinical experience. Many doctors use it in their practice. X-Lax is so pleasant-tasting, so mild and gentle, that only the welcome help it brings makes you aware you've taken anything. So don't experiment with preparations of unproved merit. Change to time-tested X-Lax, America's best-tasting laxative. And notice the change in yourself. The makers of X-Lax, America's best-tasting laxative, have just brought you The Doctor's Wife by Manya Starr. Heard every day, Monday through Friday on this station. So be sure to listen in again tomorrow at this same time to hear Mrs. Irwin say to Dr. Sanders.
Dr. Sanders.
Yes?
Why didn't you tell me yourself that you disapproved of my stipulation for the pavilion?
But Mrs. Irwin...
Now, this is what Dr. Palmer said.
And you take his word for it?
I think it's fairly obvious to everyone that Dr. Palmer is a very honest man. Perhaps too honest for everyone's good, Dr. Sanders.
Part of Betty was played by Margaret Hamilton, Dr. Sanders by Mercer McLeod, and Mrs. Irwin by Mary Perry. The Doctor's Wife is directed by John Dietz, and this is Bob Sherry speaking. When you take a laxative, do you say, "Ooh, that tastes horrible," or do you say, "Ah, that tastes good"? Well, that's what your will say when you take X-Lax, America's best-tasting laxative. It tastes like delicious chocolate. You taste no medicine. There's no bitter, salty, oily, or chalky taste. Children take it willingly. So do adults. And X-Lax is just as mild, gentle, and effective as it is pleasant-tasting. The effectiveness of its active ingredient has been proved by years of scientific research and clinical experience. So stop punishing yourself with bad-tasting preparations. For helpful, satisfying relief, take X-Lax, America's best-tasting laxative. Follow the campaign of the next president on NBC.
Well, school is over. The kids are home. It's time for adventure with Dr. Tim Detective and the Poisoner at Large from October of 1948.
This is Dr. Tim Detective to bring you by transcription the mystery of the Poisoner at Large. It isn't very often these days that you run across a case of wholesale poisoning. But when you do, well, there's never a dull moment until you've tracked the whole thing down. There's nothing worse than to be poisoned, whether you take the wrong medicine out of your medicine cabinet by mistake, or whether it's fed to you by somebody else, as it was in this particular case which came to my attention not so long ago. But I'd better start right at the beginning. Sandy and Jill, they're a couple of my very best friends and helpers, were watching me at work in my laboratory this particular evening, and, as usual, the questions flew thick and fast.
Sure, I get the general idea, but what's that machine for?
It sure makes enough racket.
Well, as I was saying, it's called a centrifuge.
That explains everything, I guess.
Yeah, I can see it just about as easy as a black sheep in a coal mine, at night.
Okay, kids, I'll back up a little. You see, when you have several kinds of bacteria, or bugs, I guess you'd call them, or when you want to separate one part of a substance from another, you put them in a centrifuge, turn on the switch, and the machine whirls them around at a few thousand revolutions per minute.
Then what happens?
Presto, like this. Centrifuge separates the lighter from the heavier parts. In this case, the bacteria I'm hoping to find from the solution they grew in. And, well, here you are. Look for yourselves.
Hey, it worked.
I'll be darned.
Now, transfer these bacteria to a culture.
Here we go again.
Well, a culture is merely something for the bacteria to grow in and feed from.
Oh.
In this case, I'm going to use the fertilized egg of a chicken. And if the experiment works, I'll soon know if these bacteria can live and grow in living tissue. At other times, the culture might be milk or a sugar solution. Or even a bit of custard pie. It's a way we scientific detectives have of finding out a lot of things.
I don't see much detective work there.
Yeah, you'd be surprised, Sandy. You'd be surprised. Hello.
Hello, Tim. Is that you?
Oh, hello, Jarvis. How are things down at the health department?
Well, we could sure use you right now if you've got the time. We're pretty short-handed, and something's come up I don't like at all. Right in your neighborhood.
Well, anything serious?
14 calls during the last hour, and all from your part of town. Food poisoning, I think.
Any clues?
Not yet. Haven't had time to check thoroughly. Thought you might help there. Like to get out your set of false mustaches and do a little detective work?
Why, Dr. Jarvis, you know us junior G-men have given up disguises. The latest thing is to graft noses on us like a bloodhound.
All right, any way you please. Now, I'll give you a list of the names and addresses of everybody we have that's been reported so far. And let you get to work in your own way.
A few minutes later, Sandy, Jill, and I were mapping out our campaign. Now, some people think it's kind of funny for a combination doctor and detective to count on a couple of kids for help on a case. But let me tell you that those two are just about the most valuable assistants I have. In between phone calls reporting new cases of food poisoning, we outlined the problem and our work.
So you mean you'd like us to get a complete list of everything the sick people ate today?
Exactly. And then by putting those lists together, we ought to find that all of them had one kind of food somewhere along the line, or ate at the same restaurant, perhaps. In other words, you see, we need a common factor to start with.
I get it. You're trying to track down where the food poisoning came from.
Exactly. And that way, we can stop anyone else from eating the contaminated food.
But gee, what is it? Arsenic or rat poison or something?
Well, that's what I'm going to find out by a careful laboratory analysis after I visit a couple of those sick people.
However, I'm willing to bet that we'll find our old friends, the bacteria, at the bottom of it.
Germs, huh?
Yes. Well, let's get going, kids.
Milk and canned soup and cream pie. Oh, yes. Dr. Kim would like to know where you bought the pie, or if you...
Let's see if I have it right, Mr. Adams. You and your wife ate hamburgers, canned pork and beans, and drank coffee. Dr. Kim told me to ask you where you bought the hamburgers. The rest of the things don't matter.
And you didn't eat anything at home, is that right? Now, I'm supposed to find out at which restaurant you ate.
Thanks. Now, let's be sure I have it right. Steak, potatoes, fresh carrots, and chocolate eclair. You're sure that's everything? Dr. Kim wants to be sure.
By the time I arrived home after looking in on some of the patients, I had enough laboratory material to keep me busy for quite a spell. Samples of food from several homes, minute bits of waste from the patients, and lists similar to those Sandy and Jill were compiling. I went into my laboratory and sat down for a few moments to think. So far, nothing about the case made sense. Except that all those people did have food poisoning. No doubt about that. And some of them were mighty sick indeed. There'd be a lot more if we didn't track down the source of the trouble in a hurry. Stop anyone else from eating the germ-laden food. Silently, I went to work. A few minutes later, Sandy and Jill were going over their lists of the food eaten by the poisoned patients with Dr. Jarvis. And as I adjusted my microscope for the umpteenth time, I found what I was looking for. I motioned the others over. Well, here's the criminal.
Can you let me see?
Yeah, me too.
They all peered into the microscope. Dr. Jarvis was the first to speak.
Nasty little germ, salmonella.
What salmonella?
I suppose it accounts for more food poisoning than all the other bacteria put together. Doesn't kill very many people. It sure makes a lot of them plenty sick.
Did you find out where it came from?
Unfortunately, no. There aren't any samples of the food I've tested so far that show its presence. The bacteria you see under the microscope are from the stomach contents of one of the patients.
Well, we're not having too much luck ourselves. Like to hear the reports of the investigation?
I think that's the next step.
Okay, Jill, you've been keeping score. Suppose you start.
Well, there isn't any one food that everybody ate.
No. Wouldn't you know it?
Oh, it's worse than that. There aren't even two kinds of food on everybody's list. I mean, you know, half of them one thing and half another.
Mm-hmm.
It just plain doesn't make sense.
It looks like a dead end from here.
Well, let's do the best we can. Let's find the, say, the three items that appear oftenest in the list you've made. And this might be a connection. First, though, I think we can rule out canned food, as there hasn't been any real trouble with commercially canned food for years. And it's impossible that all those people ate the same home canned stuff that might have gone bad. This is going to be tougher than I thought. The results of our detective work were peculiar, to say the least. But we did prove one thing. There were three food items to be suspected. Because one of those three appeared in all the diets of the ones who ate at home. With a flourish of his pencil, Dr. Jarvis summed it up.
Well, here we are. Those poisoned people had either hamburger in some form, cream pie, or chocolate eclairs. Doesn't make sense.
Wait a minute, I've got an idea. I've been working on the ones who ate out, and all of them had one of those three.
Hold on a minute.
Wait till you hear this one. I've been doing the stores and the restaurants. Everybody that ate out went to the drugstore down on the corner.
This is beginning to add up to something.
Let me see your list, Joe. No, the other one. All the pastry, the cream pies, and the chocolate eclairs came from one bakery.
Oh, sure, and we have meatloaf, hamburgers, meatballs, and tamale pie, all made with ground meat from the same butcher shop.
You're sure of that?
Uh-huh.
Now all we have to do is to chase all over town to those various stores, trying to find out what and why.
Gosh, no, you don't.
Don't what?
Don't have to chase all over town, or even this end of it. That bakery and the meat market and the drugstore where the people ate are all right together. Just four blocks down the street.
Say, wait a minute. If that's true, Jarvis, I think we might have the answer. Let's get going. Fast.
Come on, let's go. Come on.
As we drove the short distance to the shopping center, I got to thinking. You know, it's a funny thing about mysteries, especially complicated ones like this one, where people scattered over a wide area all come down with the same illness at once. At first, things don't even make sense. Look impossible, you might say. And then, with a bit of information added here and there, a dim pattern begins to take shape. Well, that's exactly what happened in the poison mystery this time. Here's what we knew. 3 food items caused those people to become deathly ill. Well, 2, really, because it occurred to me that the filling of cream pie and the filling of chocolate eclairs is the same. And the other was hamburger. Both items came from the same 2 stores. Those who had eaten at the drugstore had eaten either hamburger or the cream filling. What would be more logical than for the drugstore food to be purchased at the butcher shop next door and the bakery 2 doors down? So the pattern was now clear. Only 1 part of the mystery remained. How could both the pastry and the hamburger become poisoned with the germs of salmonella? And as we drove up in front of the stores and parked, an almost forgotten item of my medical training popped into my mind. I was sure I had the answer. Well, as we gathered in my laboratory a little later, Sandy, Jill, Dr. Jarvis, and myself, we were a happy gang. There wouldn't be any more cases of food poisoning from that source, at least. Lost in thought, I heard Sandy ask,
"But gee, Dr. Tim, how come you went right into those stores and started looking for rats?"
"You sure fooled me."
"Well, as Dr. Jarvis could tell you as well as I, one of the commonest carriers of salmonella, the food poisoning bug, is rats and mice. A few of their droppings around a food store and, well, you've seen what happens."
"Oh, that's why we have inspections by the city and campaigns against rats and mice, even if you can't get results 100% of the time."
"But why would just the cream filling in the hamburger be full of germs?"
"Well, you remember what I told you about cultures, the perfect material for bacteria to grow on?"
"Yeah."
"Sure. Well, 2 of the best cultures in the world for salmonella are cream fillings and ground meat, especially in a warm place like the bakery, or when left outside the refrigerator in a butcher shop. It's the perfect setup for an epidemic like ours."
"But why did those stores being right together give you the idea?"
"Elementary, my dear Sandy, elementary. It would be rather strange that 2 or 3 different sets of food poisoning would break out on the same day at widely separated spots. So figuring that adjoining buildings would offer plenty of opportunity for the same carriers to go back and forth freely, I apprehended the poisoners at large. It's a matter of get rid of the rats, get rid of the poisoners. And believe me, that's going to be done." This is Dr. Tim Detective, saying so long until next week at this same time, when Sandy, Jill, and I will bring you the exciting transcribed story I call The Mystery of the House That Jack Built.
We'll wrap up our kids' show because it's almost dinner time. But before we go, we're off to Fire Academy for a story titled Spies from 1946.
Presenting Dick Cole and his thrilling adventures at Far Military Academy.
We'll always be near to Far. We'll praise her wherever we are. We'll cheer her each day with a hip hip hooray. It's a rule there's no school like Far. We'll sing out our loyalty. We'll ring out with voices free. As we travel through life, we will follow our star. We'll always be near to Far.
Listen, boys and girls, today we bring you another exciting episode in the adventures of Dick Cole at Far Military Academy. You've known Dick Cole in Blue Bolt Magazine and in Foremost Comics for a long time, and now you meet him every week at this time over this same station on the air. In just a moment, you'll hear from Dick Cole himself. But first, here's a message you'll all want to hear. And now,
now, here's Dick Cole with a word about today's thrilling episode.
Hi, gang. That word thrilling about today's story is really so. In any event, it seemed plenty thrilling to me, especially when I came within 1 or 2 minutes of being killed. Yes, and if I hadn't suspected a fellow cadet at FAR by the name of Pritchett of being a foreign spy, I wouldn't be here right now. And there were some people who turned out to be even more surprised about Pritchett than I was. And that was a mighty good thing, too. But to begin the story at the beginning, we had some special field maneuvers going on at FAR with the cadet corps concentrating on artillery fire. I was in charge of a special gun, a 105-millimeter howitzer. What was so special about that gun? Well, that's what my roommate Simba Carno wanted to know when he came wandering across the field.
Hey, Dick!
Simba, somebody might shoot you for a stray squirrel if you wander around during maneuvers this way.
Oh, we finished up our assignment for the day, so I thought I'd come over and say hello.
Okay. Hello.
Well, hello. You know, I've been kind of curious.
For a change.
Well, I've been wondering what's so special about this howitzer of yours. Nearly every instructor at the academy has been around sometime or other today, and Major Farr is hanging around all the time.
It isn't the gun, Simba. It's the rangefinder we've got.
Rangefinder?
Uh-huh. It's a brand new gadget that Major Farr invented. And believe me, it's a peach.
It really works, huh?
Boy, does it. I'll call my gun sergeant over. Hey, Phil! Phil Pritchett!
Huh?
Come over here a minute, will you?
Okay. Ceasefire!
Time to knock off for the day, Phil. And I just wanted you to tell Simba here what you think of Major Farr's rangefinder.
That's the most amazing thing I've ever seen in operation in my life. It's just terrific.
Well, how does it work?
Darned if I know. Dick is about the only cadet who knows.
And I can't say anything. Major Farr swore me to secrecy.
Oh, heck, I'd like to know how it works.
Yeah, believe me, so would I. After shooting the gun all day and watching those howitzer shells land on a dime, after Dick has sat there and twisted some funny-looking dials on the rangefinder, I'm nuts to discover how it works.
No sense in trying to talk him into telling you, Phil. I know Dick. You're just wasting your breath.
Oh, but what harm can it really do? Look, Dick, let me take a look at the gadget, huh? Nobody will ever know the difference.
No, Phil, I'm sorry, but I can't do it.
Oh, my gosh, you think I was some kind of a foreign spy or something.
It isn't that it's you, Phil. The Major just doesn't want to take any chances with anybody at all.
That's a pretty darn lame excuse, if you ask me. Okay, so you don't trust me. Well, you'll be good and sorry, Cole.
Hey, hey, no. Cut it out, fellas. Here comes Major Farr.
And hit. As you were, boys. Well, Cole, what do you think of the rangefinder now?
It works out every bit as well as we thought it would, sir. It really is something, sir.
And what about you, Pritchett? What do you think of it?
Well, I was just firing the gun, Major. I'll admit that the shots were very accurate, but I haven't even seen the rangefinder.
And no one else has seen it either, my boy. I've been waiting to see whether these field tests would prove satisfactory, and as they have, I intend taking it to Washington tomorrow. I'm going to offer it to the War Department.
Say, that's great, sir.
Boy, I'll say.
Couldn't I take a quick look at the gadget, sir?
But I'm sorry, Pritchett. Not just now. If the Army wants the rangefinder, I'm sure they won't want anyone to know about the mechanism. If they turn it down, you may examine the finder all you wish.
Major, I'm not a spy or anything, sir.
I'm sorry. It's impossible.
Oh, I... All right. Yes, sir.
Until tomorrow, I want to keep that rangefinder under constant guard. Not that I expect anything to happen to it, but nevertheless... let's see. Carno.
Yes, sir?
As long as you have your gun and your field equipment with you, I suppose you start the guard. I don't want anyone to approach that finder. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, sir.
Cole, you'll arrange for a proper guard throughout the night. Now, you needn't take any actual guard duty yourself unless you wish it.
Yes, sir. But I'd just as soon relieve Simba myself later on.
As you wish.
Sir, may I be a member of the guard detail?
I'm sorry, Pritchett. Not that I don't trust you, my boy, but I'm afraid in this particular case that your curiosity could be a little too much for you. We won't put temptation in your way.
Thank you.
time for me to relieve Simba.
Golly, sure was funny how Phil Pritchett kept wanting to see that rangefinder. So quiet out here.
I hope Simba hasn't fallen asleep.
What's that? Hey, some dark shapes there in the bushes near the rangefinder. What the devil is wrong with Simba? Why hasn't he stopped them? Hey, Simba!
Oh, who goes there?
Cadet Cole! Simba, you goof!
Huh?
Who are those fellows prowling around?
Prowlers? Well, I didn't see anybody.
Right over there, in those bushes. I saw them in the moonlight as I came to relieve you.
Well, gee, Dick, I didn't see anybody at all.
Well, I did. And I'm sure I heard some twigs snap.
You sure?
Dead sure. Say, maybe it was Phil Pritchett snooping around. All of that prying of his.
Sure. And his talking about spies and everything. Oh, Dick, you don't think that Phil is mixed up with any spy stuff, do you?
Well, I'm going over to his tent right now. And you take no chances here. Call out the guard and make a thorough search. That's an order.
Corporal of the guard! Corporal of the guard! Number one calling Corporal of the guard!
Is Phil Pritchett in here?
Huh? Somebody call me?
Phil, is that you?
Sure, it's me. Who did you think it was?
Hey, what do you want waking me up in the middle of the night, huh?
Were you over near the rangefinder within the last 5 minutes?
Oh, for Pete's sake. I've been right here in my cot, sound asleep.
What's going on? What's the matter, boys?
Major Farr. I saw and heard someone prowling around near the rangefinder a few minutes ago when I was on my way to relieve Simba. And I thought it might have been Phil here.
Well, I've been asleep for more than an hour.
Is that true, Dick? Was he asleep when you came into this tent?
Well, yes, sir. He seemed to be.
Well, here now, Cole, you can't go jumping to conclusions and accusing someone without good reason, you know. If Pritchett here was really in his bed, tell me, did Carno recognize the prowler?
Well, he didn't see anyone at all, sir.
Well, possibly it was just your own imagination, then. You realize that the rangefinder may be extremely important, and your mind is full of talk about guarding the mechanism, so it's very possible that you didn't see anyone near the finder at all.
I could swear, Major, that there was somebody prowling in the bushes nearby.
Well, you go out and relieve Carnot. I'm sure if there are any prowlers, you'll discover them all right.
Yes, sir.
Pritchett.
Yes, sir?
You're sure you've been here in bed all the time?
Yes, sir. I've been here all the time.
Very well. Just make sure you stay here. And Cole, go about your duties.
Gosh, there hasn't been a sound. Not a single sound for almost 2 hours. Maybe Simba was right. Maybe there wasn't anybody around the rangefinder at all. I guess the Major was sore at me for suspecting Phil Pritchett. But even so, he wasn't too sure about Phil himself. Well, just so as nothing happens before morning and the Major bundles this gadget on a train and gets it to Washington safely. Can't help but get a little sleepy. Maybe I've been reading too many detective spy stories lately. I gotta stop yawning.
What's that? Who's there? Who's there?
Funny. I didn't see anybody, but I could have sworn that I heard a twig crack again. Probably my imagination. There it is again.
Who's there?
Can't see anything. Maybe I'm going crazy. I could have sworn...
This'll help you to go crazy, Sonny. Ooh. Okay, Fred. The kid's out cold.
Okay, finish taking your pictures of the rangefinder and let's get out of here. Come on, hurry it up, will you?
Fred,
We better take this kid with us.
Why? What for?
I'm not sure whether he saw us or not, and we can't afford to take any chances.
Yes, I suppose you're right. Just in case he gave a good description of us. This country doesn't like spies.
Here, give me a hand. We'll tie him up and throw him into the back of the car.
Too bad the boy won't be conscious to enjoy his last automobile ride.
We'll go back to the adventures of Dick Cole in just a moment. But first, here's a message for you from the people who make this program possible. Now, back to the adventures of Dick Cole. You remember, boys and girls, that Dick was in a pretty tight spot. While guarding the new artillery rangefinder Major Fard invented, Dick was taken by surprise and knocked unconscious by spies who were after the secret of the rangefinder. When Dick came to, he found himself in a strange house. He was bound and gagged with strong ropes, holding to the chair in which he was sitting. The spies were a few feet away, busily eating and talking.
This canned food isn't too good, Fred, but I was so blamed hungry.
Yeah, sure, so was I. Canned food is lousy. So it's all this kid's fault. If he hadn't surprised us and we were taking our first pictures of the rangefinder and then raised such a commotion that we had to lie low for hours.
Yeah, we could have finished the whole job early in the evening and been on our way by now.
How are we going to get rid of this kid?
I don't know yet, but we'll think of something.
Well, let's get it over and done with.
He's come to.
Yeah. Hello there, young fella. Feeling all bright and chipper after your little nap?
You know, I think he wants to say something. Maybe I ought to take the gag out of his mouth.
Yeah.
There you are, young fella. Feel better?
You two are a couple of dirty spies. I heard what you were saying about taking pictures of the rangefinder.
No, no, don't get yourself all worked up there, sonny boy. It isn't good for your blood pressure.
Well, you can't get away with it. You're filthy spies, and I'm not going to...
Shut up! Keep a civil tongue in your head, youngster. You may as well enjoy the last minutes you'll be spending on this earth.
Well, what are you two gentlemen going to do with me?
You're going to have a nice, long sleep. A permanent sleep. You know too much, and we can't take any chances.
Maybe he'd like to have something to eat first.
He's not hungry. Besides, why waste the food?
So you got a lot of pictures of the rangefinder, huh?
I'll say we did, kid. Enough so the people we're working for can reproduce the gadget perfectly. We have the complete dope on it.
Oh, you have the complete dope on it, huh?
Yes.
You just think you have.
What do you mean, boy? Talk fast.
Well, there's one part of the mechanism. It's a very delicate part. It was removed and put safely away.
Blast it.
So, unless you have that part of the mechanism, all the pictures in the world won't do you the least bit of good.
Then you'll tell us about it right now. You'll describe it. And if necessary, you'll even draw diagrams of it. Lucky thing, after all, that we took you with us.
I can't tell you about it.
You'll talk or...
I'd tell you if I knew. But there's only one person, except for Major Farr, who knows about the mechanism. Why should I tell you who he is unless you swear to spare my life?
We'll play ball. Who is it? Talk fast.
Well, it's another cadet at Farr. Fellow who worked on the finder with me. His name is Phil Pritchett.
Phil Pritchett. All right. We'll get him and bring him here, too. We've gone too far in this thing to stop now.
right, you sonny boy. Now, we'll give you a couple of minutes to talk things over with your buddy here. And then you'll tell us what you know about the rangefinder, or we'll beat it out of you.
I'm sorry, Phil. Did they knock you around awfully hard?
No, it wasn't too bad, Dick. I don't understand. I told them over and over again I didn't know anything about the rangefinder, but they kept insisting.
Shh! Not so loud.
They kept saying that you told them that I knew some secret stuff about it. Dick, did you really tell them a thing like that?
Yes, Phil, I did. Sorry as blazes to get you in a tight spot like this, but I just had to do it.
Oh, he scared the daylights out of me, sneaking into my tent, waking me up. I made so much racket when they dragged me past the sentries. I can't understand how the whole cadet corps didn't wake up.
You did make a lot of noise, but nobody stopped them, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fine, Phil.
Hey, now you're talking in riddles, too. Dick, what's going on here?
These men are spies. Real spies. Took a lot of pictures of the rangefinder. Enough to know all about it.
Yeah?
But I told them there was part of the mechanism that was removed. And that you were the only one who knew about it.
But, Dick, I don't know anything at all about it.
Of course not. I haven't time to explain now. They're coming back. Just remember this, Phil.
Yeah, what is it, Dick?
No matter what they say to us, no matter what they do to us, just stall for time. Understand?
Right.
Stall for time.
Well, have you young fellas decided to talk? Speak up.
Well, mister, we've been wondering about something.
It isn't your place to wonder about anything. You get your little school friend here to tell us what he knows about the mechanism on the rangefinder. And quick.
We couldn't help wondering if we told you everything we know about the rangefinder, would it do us any good? I mean, would you let us both go, maybe?
Boy, if you don't tell us things, it'll go badly with you.
You'll do best to start talking, youngsters. I've seen men older and tougher than you go to pieces when they get the very special treatment we have. You'll save yourselves a lot of grief.
All right, then, Pritchard, or whatever your name is, talk.
Well, I can't say anything when I don't know. I mean when I don't know what to say.
He means he wants a little more time to think it over.
You've had all the time you're going to get, both of you.
Well, you must be getting a lot of money for all this, so what difference will a few minutes more or less make?
That settles it.
We tried the nice way to get you boys to talk. Now you'll have to learn the not-so-nice way.
Get the instruments out. Let's get on with this.
Dick, what are they going to do?
I don't know. Torturous, it looks like. Just keep a stiff upper lip and keep stalling for time.
Here, none of that whispering.
If I weren't tied to this chair, I'd show you.
But you are tied.
Here are the instruments.
All right, open the case.
Okay. Now, let's see. What'll we use first?
It doesn't matter. They'll start talking when they feel a little pain. Here, let me have that knife.
No. No, stay away from me. Don't come near me with that knife.
Why don't you leave him alone, you rotten spies?
Keep away.
All right, up with your hands.
Up with your hands.
Up higher.
Far.
Keep them up.
Thank goodness you're here, sir.
Keep your hands up there or these guns will go off. Are you all right, boys?
Yes, sir, we're okay.
You got here just in time, sir. These men are spies. They took pictures of your rangefinder, and they were going to torture Phil and me to find out more about it.
Well, they won't do any more spying or anything else for some time to come.
We never should have tangled up with those kids. They're bad luck, especially that big one.
Yeah, we should have taken our pictures and gotten out.
You'll have a long, long time to think about your mistakes. A long time in a quiet, very safe place. Take them away, men.
Wait a minute. Before we go, I want to know something. You licked us. You outsmarted us. But how did you know we were here?
It wasn't I who outsmarted you. It was a boy named Dick Cole who outsmarted you.
You see, that's the big kid there. I told you he was bad luck for us.
And you haven't seen the last of him. You'll meet him again in court on your way to the penitentiary.
All right, men. Take them to the county jail for the rest of the night.
All right. Sorry.
And be careful, men. They're dangerous. Now, I better cut these ropes and let your boys free.
Thank you, sir.
It sure was wonderful, sir, that you got here when you did. Golly, if you'd been just 5 minutes later.
Phil is right, sir. I don't know how much longer we could have held out.
I owe you a great debt of thanks, Dick, for saving the secrets of the rangefinder. I'm sure the government is grateful to you for your work in capturing the spies. And if the army likes my rangefinder, they'll be doubly grateful.
Well, sir, I don't understand yet what's going on, Major Farr. Maybe I'm just dumb or something. But what did Dick have to do with capturing the spies? And how did you know that we were here? And what's more, why did Dick tell those fellows that I knew something about the rangefinder when I didn't know anything about it at all? What's so funny?
Well, nothing is really funny, Phil. It's just that you've asked so many questions at once.
I owe you an apology for dragging you into this, Phil. But I had to use you for bait.
Bait?
That's right.
What Dick means is this, Phil. Even though he knew that I didn't suspect you of really being a spy...
Glad of that, sir.
Well, he has seen my methods in similar situations before. He knew that I wouldn't take any chances and that I'd have someone keep a watch on you just in case. So I assigned Lieutenant Edmonds of the faculty to stay near your tent and keep watch all night.
When the spy slugged me and brought me here to this house, I knew that there was only one way to notify Major Farr. The spies had to retrace their footsteps. They were too smart to try to steal the Major's rangefinder. That's why they simply took pictures of it. Well, I convinced them that the pictures weren't complete, that there was a mechanism that had been removed, that the finder was worthless without it, and that you were the only one except the Major who knew anything about it, Phil.
Holy smokes.
Naturally, I realized that something had gone wrong when I found that Dick wasn't guarding the rangefinder. And when I discovered signs of a body having been dragged through the bushes to the highway, and what obviously must have been a waiting car...
Well, I was out cold through all that, Major.
And I was positive you'd get word to me if you possibly could.
Yes, sir. That's why I used Phil here as a decoy.
And Lieutenant Edmonds reported to me immediately when he saw two men sneaking into Phil's tent. Oh, by the way, Phil,
yes,
you certainly did raise a howl when they were taking you off.
I think I'm seeing daylight. Well, no wonder the sentries didn't hear me. I couldn't understand why they'd gone deaf.
Well, I instructed them to let the men who were taking you get through to their car.
Mm-hmm.
Lieutenant Edmonds and I followed in my car. And when I saw this house, we went into town and picked up some police officers. That's why it took us a little while to get here.
Well, you did get here, sir, and that's all that counts.
Well, I'm proud of you, Dick. Proud of both of you. You behaved with intelligence and courage under fire.
Well, I'm not sorry at all that I had the wit scared out of me, as long as it helped to catch some spies.
You know, boys, I might make a fairly good spy myself.
I beg your pardon, sir?
That's right. And I'll prove it to you. I can tell by the expressions on both of your faces that what you two could stand most right now is breakfast, and lots of it. Am I right?
Oh, you sure are, sir. You're a champion spy, and that's no fooling.
Well, then, what are we waiting for? Let's get back to camp.
Breakfast, here we come.
Dick Cole will be back in just a moment, but first... Be sure to listen in again next week, Dick Cole fans, same time, same station, for another exciting half hour with Dick Cole at Farr Military Academy. Yes, meet Dick Cole every week on the air and enjoy his thrilling radio adventures as you've enjoyed him and his life at Farr in those two favorite comic magazines, Blue Bolt and Foremost Comics. And now, here's Dick Cole.
So long, gang. I'll be seeing you all again next week. So remember to listen for us. It's a date.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.